Hi, welcome to our session on healthcare reformed or deformed, how the single payer movement is organizing in the era of the ACA rollout. I'm Martha Livingston, chair of the Socialist Caucus, and we do a session on this issue from this perspective every year, and here you are at this one with this particular focus because it's a very interesting moment in the movement for healthcare justice, isn't it? It couldn't be politically more interesting and complex, and we welcome you not only to come and hear what we have to say, but to join our movement. And first way to start doing that would be to sign the SCAFA, Socialist Caucus, sign-up sheet, which would get you in touch with us. We promise that we send out a maximum of 2 emails a year, because I know what that feels like. Okay, we're going to get rolling, and our first speaker is Dr. Jonathan Ross. John, as well as being a member of the National Board of Physicians for National Health Program, is medical director of outpatient internal medicine. Doesn't that sound weird, outpatient internal? I mean, at St. Vincent Mercy Medical Center in Toledo, Ohio. He's got lots of other important titles, and I'm not going to read them all to you, but he has been active in the movement for single-payer national health care for more than 20 years and is active both on the national level and in the state of Ohio. So without further ado, John Ross.
All right. Hey. So is that working? You can hear me okay. I want to start off with a personal story, but I guess I'm supposed to do some sort of disclosure thing first, right? I have no financial relationships to disclose other than every one of you pays me, because mostly I do Medicare and your taxes are my income. So let's remember that one person's tax is another person's income, and y'all are paying me, so if you don't like what I have to say, you could always try to fire me, I guess. So I want to talk about does Medicaid managed care save money, increase access, and improve patient care? And the reason I originally got interested in this area is at one point I was a Medicaid HMO medical director. My 501c3 charitable hospital in the 1980s formed a Medicaid HMO. And I was responsible for many of the policies that were implemented at that time. And I guess I'll short-circuit it because there's some really good stuff to come, and I want to keep my presentation as short as possible. But just let me tell you, there is no good work to be done in the insurance industry. I'll give you a single example. I sat there with the nuns while the man who was going to do the marketing said we were going to market door-to-door. Can you guess why we marketed door-to-door? Because you can watch the person walk to the door. 1% of the patients generate 21% of the healthcare costs. When the wrong person walks to the door with their oxygen concentrator on their scooter, they don't even walk sometimes, you say, oh, Mrs. Jones, when you know it's Mrs. Smith, and you go on to the next door. And I watched the nuns sit there and accept that as a marketing campaign. We had data to show that our heart services at our institution were comparable to Cleveland Clinic. And I said, wow, we ought to let people know about that. Marketing people said, oh, no, we don't want to do that. We'll get all the heart patients. So I cut my income by a third and decided to do good work, which is taking care of sick people and teaching young doctors to be internists like myself. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the managed care industry as part of this, but not all that much. Sources are up there, including some slides from PNHP. We're fortunate to have Steffi Wohlhandler here. She's going to do a wonderful presentation as well. So how many of you have worked with Medicaid, just so I know what the people know what Medicaid is? Fewer hands than I hope, so I'm going to run through it really quick. It came on with Medicare in 65. And it's basically our program for the very poor, elderly, and disabled. It's means-tested. It's all based on income and other such things. And it's a partnership between the feds and the states. It's functionally our program for low-income Americans, but it's categorical. You've got to qualify for it. So we have all these categories. You're eligible. Are you a good enough human being to have decent health care, right? I mean, that's all part of the craziness of the American healthcare system. So it covers over 50 million people almost at any given time. People are cycling in and out of it all the time because it's categorical and has eligibility criteria. And it, over the course of an American's lifetime, the chances they'll be on Medicaid is about 1 in 4. It's about 75 million people at some point have their lives touched by the Medicaid program. And it's a lot of sick folks, 46 million low-income children and their parents, because only if you have children are you eligible. That's one of the eligibility criteria in some places. A lot of non-elderly people with severe disability, including mental disabilities, are part of it, including children. These are children who actually have Medicare, because they'll be permanently disabled for whatever reason, because of mental retardation or mental illness. It also includes low-income seniors, where Medicaid becomes the gap policy for their Medicare. Medicare has gaps in it. It has co-payments and additional payments you have to put in out of pocket. And if you're really poor and you qualify for Medicare, then Medicaid acts as the secondary insurance for Medicare. And pregnant women, at least while they're pregnant, you know, also will qualify. Of course, once they have the baby, they may qualify as well, the baby and mom. And it provides a list of services, some of which are mandatory, some of which are optional. Most states cover almost all these services in one shape or another, although they can be very skimpy on some services like dentistry. There are all kinds of special rules for the optional services. Of course, physician, hospital, lab services, nursing home, and health, other home care are not optional under the Medicaid program. You have to provide them. And it's very costly. This is old numbers. I would guess at least 10% higher. So it's probably in the area of $400 billion that we're spending every year on Medicaid. And it's been growing faster than any other part of the state budget. So there's a huge pressure on state legislators to try and figure out how they're going to finance the Medicaid program. And I think Steffi's going to show us a slide about, you know, how much worse the uninsurance program problem would be in the U.S. if we didn't have Medicaid. So it's filling the gaps as people are losing their private coverage. That's the fundamental point. Now, the Affordable Care Act has mandated that states stand in place, that whatever effort they've been putting into Medicaid has to remain in place until the Affordable Care Act goes in place. And then, of course, there's supposed to be, although the Supreme Court threw a hand grenade into that, an expansion of Medicaid. And that expansion of Medicaid is to cover people up to about 138% of the poverty level, which isn't a whole lot of money, believe me. But it was supposed to get them under coverage. And, of course, in a number of states, the plans for expanding Medicaid have kind of gone by the board because we have some real wackos, right-wing folks who have decided that they want the poorest of the poor not to have coverage for whatever strange reason, political or whatever, that they may have. Well, at this particular time, and this is finally getting to my subject matter, about 70% of Medicaid patients are currently under some form of managed care program, which is in many areas basically for-profit private health insurance. So they've been pushed into for-profit private health insurance from the traditional state-run Medicaid programs. And most of this was because it was an effort to control these costs over the years. And maybe I'll give you the short scenario that I've heard from state rep people in Ohio, is that when we go to a managed care company, we can get a per person, per month payment to them, and then we can have a budget. So we know how much we're going to spend. And we're not as much concerned about, it's getting more expensive. Of course, that's a concern, but at least they can put it in the budget and pass the proper amount of money in the budget to cover Medicaid. Whereas in the old system, you didn't know until probably 3 months after the end of the year when all the bills came in what you spent for Medicaid on the year before. So some of the reason, an additional reason besides cost, which they were hoping Medicare that managed care would control, was the issue of predictability of costs. It's a really complex program, and so shake heavy salt on some of the data I'll show you. But Medicaid is very complex. It's basically 50 different programs. Some states have very significant waivers from the basic federal rules that allow them to do things that other states do not. So they're not entirely comparable state to state. In general, across the entire country, the federal government pays about 60% of Medicaid. The states pay about 40%. But in some poorer states, the feds pay more, and in some wealthy states, the feds pay less. And the majority of Medicaid costs aren't even touched by managed care, because the majority of them go for the long-term care of the elderly in what are mostly for-profit nursing home facilities, which is a whole another piece that we need to cope with at some point. I'm getting old enough now that I'm kind of worried about the nursing home piece of this whole thing. It used to be just kind of off in the vague distance, not quite so much anymore. Real quick, lots of reform going on in these managed care programs. It's a huge amount of moving pieces, but people are looking at reforms of the managed care policies. Some people are looking at new quality improvement strategies. One idea is to get quality data on these Medicaid HMOs and then auto-enroll people who don't choose a program into only the ones that have the best quality. Whether you can truly measure that's a whole other issue. Many states looking at things like patient-centered medical home, better home initiatives to care for the elderly in their home rather than in nursing homes, accountable care organizations, again, policy entrepreneurship at the nth degree. We don't have any idea whether those critters are going to work. So all this stuff is going on behind the scenes, so it's only fair to tell you that this is a very, very complicated set of moving pieces. Here's some comments from a recent national conference of state legislatures. State policy makers are asking the federal government for more flexibility to change Medicaid without a lot of red tape. They want to expand managed care, experiment with things like pay-for-performance, create these new medical homes and reward them for their existence, streamline services. They want to tether payment to patient health results. So again, this pay-for-performance idea. They want to link Medicaid to general fund revenue growth so that if they don't have growth, they don't want to have to increase their Medicaid spending. Of course, they're all crazy to cut taxes in some of those states, so I don't know how you'd ever keep up with even the normal technologic growth. And they're asking patients even to pay, these are people with no money, remember it's means tested, to pay for a portion of their care. And so there's some quotes that were in this article from the Association of State Legislatures. Basically, legislators telling one physician interested in this, we're going to send you, meaning the providers, the money. We want you to change how you practice medicine, i.e., you know, we don't know what to do either. We want out of this. The only certain way to reduce Medicaid costs is to allow the legislature to set a specific capped amount to be spent on Medicaid each year. In one person commenting on an HMO model in Florida, it's never been proven that it has improved access or quality of care. There have been lots of problems with access, and there I can tell you indeed some horror stories in Florida about access. You know, being in an HMO with specialists that are 100 miles away from your home, that's where you're supposed to go to get your heart doctor to see you. When you move toward what will be private managed care with guaranteed profits, you're going to dismantle and starve to death the safety net system that's in place. You might kill the backup plan, which is the actual current system. So there are people worried that if this doesn't work, now what do? We've kind of killed off all the safety net hospitals and safety net providers. Others were commenting on how a family could be priced out of access. If you make them pay at the emergency room for care, family might delay care, a child might die. Total emphasis in this waiver, this is again talking about Florida, is on cutting costs with no consideration to quality and access. So it isn't just people who want fundamental reform like myself who are seeing this. These are state legislators who are looking at these programs with a lot of questions. This is a really busy slide. Two areas I want to point to in this. Number two, cost containment. This is from the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured. They put out nice publications. If you want to read more, this is excellent to kind of get background. Cost containment remains the strongest focus for Medicaid. That's number two. Number four, Medicaid programs are engaged in a range of delivery changes, including managed care reforms and care coordination strategies. So all these things are, of course, sitting in that last one, which is in the political environment of the Affordable Care Act, and we'll hear more about that from Steffi. So to summarize some of this stuff, as in national health reform, state Medicaid programs are facing the same fundamental problems that brought us to why we want reform in the first place. We've got problems with access with nearly 50 million people, with no line to get into, let alone an opportunity to be rationed. no cost control, with our costs going through the roof, nearly double our European competitors in terms of cost, and the whole issue of maintaining a high level of care, where there's plenty of evidence to show that our care in the U.S. is mediocre at best and in some areas toward the bottom of the scale. So let's talk a little bit about what we do have some evidence on, and it doesn't necessarily completely apply to the Medicaid system, but as with Medicaid managed care, the affordable care exchanges, Medicare Part D, and the prominence of the Medicare Advantage program, and things like premium support proposals, like we hear from Congressman Ryan, we're rapidly moving toward taking our public insurance and handing it over to competing capitated for-profit private insurance companies. And so the question is how are they going to behave? What will we see? Well, one of the things we already know is that it undoubtedly will increase costs. Remember, their job isn't necessarily to take care of sick people. Their job is to make as much money as possible for stockholders. And so when we lose what's called monopsony power, meaning the one-sided power to negotiate with providers, for sure we're going to see costs go up. So once you fragment that payment system, the way we're talking about fragmenting it even more and now in the Medicaid program, you're going to have increased costs because you lose that strong bargaining power on the part of the government or whatever public entity is responsible for negotiating with providers. You'll also see problems with choice. We have good data from the managed care in Medicare to show that insurers will cherry pick. And we know that if you can avoid that 1% who generate 21% of costs, you're guaranteeing yourself substantial profits. And of course, knowing that, and I'm telling you my own personal experience, you know, was this, even in a 501c3 charitable HMO run by Catholic nuns, this was going on. Because if you don't sink to that lowest common denominator, you get your head handed to you in the marketplace. If you don't do what the bad guys do, you will be out of business. So short of having a tremendously more transparency than there is in this industry, there's no hope for it ever to behave in an ethical way. For-profit managed care consistently produces higher administrative overhead with no evidence that it necessarily provides better care. So let's quickly run. These are PNHP slides. Steffi probably has some others. The drive for-profit HMOs was dramatic through the 1990s, and this happened in the last bout of health reform. As soon as we began talking about health reform and pushing people into HMOs, which was basically the Clinton plan, all of our originally relatively not-for-profit HMOs suddenly were looking for capital for expansion and quickly became for-profit. There's some real horror stories there. No time to tell you about the number of not-for-profit institutions that were taken over with no money put into public trust, even though they were developed as not-profit entities. There should have been money put into public trust. Some states managed to create these public trusts. In our state, Anthem ran off with a whole ton of money and never put money into public trust when they converted from a not-for-profit Blue Cross into a for-profit. Investor-owned HMOs, pretty consistently worse. I don't know if we could say that this is statistically significant, but you can see pretty consistently across this graph that the not-for-profit HMOs seem to provide better immunization, mammography, pap smears, beta blockers after a heart attack, diabetic eye exams, and overall satisfaction versus for-profit HMOs. Another problem is the whole notion that competition will ever control costs in healthcare. There's not a whole lot of evidence to show that that's happening. In fact, we have probably the highest level of competition of any country in the world, and our costs are the highest. And we've been doing it, like I showed you there, since at least the 80s and 90s. So where's the evidence, right? The overall trend is higher and higher, higher costs with higher and higher, higher levels of competition. It doesn't meet the sniff test whatsoever. And this was an article published that looked at the number of places in America where you could actually have three competing insurance companies, genuine competition, at least with three. The black areas are those places. You can see most of the country. Not a whole lot of possibility for much competition between for-profit insurers that would control cost and maybe push toward an increased quality. We have evidence from seniors about their inability to sort things out. I personally have already gone on to the exchange You know, I have, you know, what was the Dylan thing? 20 years of school and then they put you on the day shift, right? But I've got a lot of schooling and I went on to the exchange in Ohio, which is the federal exchange, to look and see, could I retire early, right? I'm 63, I'll be 64. Could I get out early, not have to wait for Medicare? And the answer is, it's complicated. And I can't imagine, you know, given I've got an MD, an MPH, and a lot of additional education, and I'm very sophisticated in this, and it was still pretty confusing to me. Good gracious, what's a person who's a Medicaid individual supposed to do, or a low-income worker who's got limited education supposed to do when they go on there? So, again, we've got some actual Class A evidence from the RAND Health Insurance Experiment. Those that were the sickest did not do well in an experiment where people were assigned to HMO versus fee-for-service, free care. Medicare, again, we know that they cherry-picked. We know that before people went onto a Medicare HMO, that's the yellow bar, the people that they picked up had this kind of experience. 66% of the costs of those that were the average in fee-for-service in that same community. And of course, when they became unhappy with their HMO and left, their costs were 180% of the baseline. So people who went in, who were sick, did badly, they left, we paid for it. We know this cherry-picking is still going on. A recent article from the National Bureau of Economic Research pointed out that insurers do risk select against each other. They actually showed that in Medicaid managed care, infants whose costs were likely to exceed the capitation payments that these Medicaid managed care companies received die more frequently, had worse health outcomes, and there were a higher abortion rate, which actually led to even fewer children being born. We know the administrative costs are higher. We know that the data is just consistent over and over again. Private insurers take 16 to 25% approximately of the money to provide for their administrative services and profits versus a public program like Medicare, which is consistently under now 3%. And here's the reason why it's so expensive. We have an army of people chasing money in this complex system. The problem is the complexity. We can't have an army of people hired to chase the dollars when we don't have enough clinicians to really care for the people that are there. And these are the guys who never want it to change, and gals. There's Angela Braley from WellPoint, all making tens of millions of dollars a year, hundreds of millions of dollars of stock options. So here's some data from Kaiser Family Foundation website. All I did was take the growth in costs and compare it to the managed care penetration in Medicaid for those, not for the nursing home folks, but this is just for the acute care services. And you can see we've got a 0.01 R squared on this, so that the higher the level of cost growth, basically the higher level of managed care competition. Second graph here that looks at the number of uninsured. It doesn't look like being in Medicaid managed care has actually saved enough money to open up access. Again, virtually no correlation across all the states in terms of going toward Medicaid, allowing there to be fewer uninsured. And we've got this whole issue of primary care supply, and in many of the places where there aren't enough primary care providers, we don't have enough ancillary providers like nurse practitioners, and it's unlikely that these small additional payments that are going to go to primary care will expand that market either. So attempts at reform can't be rushed. Well, that's nice. We got people dying every day. This is from the Mercatus Center, kind of a right-wing think tank. I'll just drop to the bottom line. Successful reforms that provide a combination of cost reduction and maintain or increase access are hard to find. Damn straight when you're doing it through the private insurance industry. But we have a conclusion to arrive at, which is this is not so. It's right in front of us. We've got a national health insurance bill in front of Congress, H.R. 676, that could cover everybody, save $500 billion a year, 100%, not 95% covered. It'll save lives probably on the order of 50,000 a year, if not more. It's going to save the money, and it's the right thing to do.